Today, on You're Watching a Movie with Silas Lindenstein. It's a film club edition, and I am joined by my good friend and comedian, Emmett Montgomery, and we're going to talk about one of his favorite comedies, Booksmart.
You're watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein in the theaters, you find this. So go on and press play and rewind this. This speech that is timeless. Love it like it, oh, we lose it, can't find it. And we ain't keen on being reminded about the film if it isn't tough. We spend a lot of time at the cinema. It's just me and my friends, we watch plenty stuff. For movies, yeah, I've been above. Whether big or they small, no, for me don't make a difference, love. You're watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein in the theaters, you find this. So go on and press play and rewind this. This speech that is timeless. Love it like it, oh, we lose it, can't find it. And we ain't keen on being reminded about the film if it didn't hit. No, gotta lose it. Watch movies with my friends, bringing joy, that's the blueprint. So come on and let's do this. Leave pain behind us and relax your mind. Come watch a movie with Silas.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to You're Watching a Movie with Silas Lindenstein. I am your host, Silas Lindenstein. Welcome. Today is a film club edition, and my guest for this film club is a good friend of mine, comedian Emmett Montgomery. He is here to talk about one of his favorite films, one that he says he believes is one of the funniest films to him in like the last decade, Booksmart. It's a 2019 film. If you haven't heard that yet or haven't heard about it, go watch it and then come back here and listen to it because it's going to be a spoiler-filled episode. If you don't care about spoilers, go ahead and listen. But you've been warned. We're going to talk about it beginning, middle, and end. So, we talk about it full length with spoilers. So enjoy. Enjoy that. Emmett. He's a longtime friend of mine. He's appeared on my show, The Real Nerds of Comedy. He was on the last one here in Emerald City Comic Con in 2024 right now. He was on the first one like 8 years ago. And I've had him on shows quite a bit. He's been a guest on podcasts that I've done. And so I've been wanting to have him on to talk about films. He gave me two. This is the one we decided to talk about. I decided I wanted to share. So he's kind of I think he's like the father of Seattle comedy. He's like, he's everywhere. Everyone knows him. He's very supportive. He's wonderful. If you want to check him out, he's at the Joke Tellers Union every second and fourth Wednesday at the Clockout Lounge here in the Seattle area. He just headlined the Capitol Hill Comedy Bar here in Seattle. And if you do want to hear an hour of jokes from him, you'll have to follow him on Facebook or the Instagrams here where he's going to be next. But he is very bookable for shows and classes and other weirdness. He's always producing or involved in something new. It's always exciting to see what his latest things are. So if you're not a fan of his, I think this podcast will be the beginning of your journey to loving Emmett Montgomery. Booksmart. We're here. Got this recorded via Zoom. So you ready? I'm ready. So we're gonna check out at least watch the trailer first. It's really good. So here we are, Film Club, with my guest, Emmett Montgomery, discussing the film Booksmart. One of the things that this algorithm thing is showing me and why I think this film club is so important is movies like Booksmart. Because how did I miss this? The algorithm, no algorithm told me to watch this. And suddenly I'm like, well, what I won't say, hey, AI, whatever, Allen Iverson, whoever you go by, yeah. AI, you don't know me because you would have told me about Booksmart. So for those of you new to Film Club, so my guest here, Emmett Montgomery, a nationally recognized comedian who happens to live in Seattle. he's my guest today. Today's film club suggestion was the movie Booksmart. As you know, I asked my friends, like, hey, what are your give me three of your favorite films or something like that, and I usually pick one. And this time Emmett said this is one of, I think, I don't want to misquote you, but you said you think it is one of the funniest recent comedies out.
Yeah,
that has been out.
I think it's one of the most successful comedies in the last 10 years.
Yeah. And
it should be noted that the two things we were narrowing down was Booksmart or psychedelic blood soaked revenge epic Mandy starring Nicolas Cage.
Right.
I was all about
yeah. that. I still want to do one about that.
I sometimes lean more to than Mandy over comedies. I'm very picky about my comedies because I will try to see them, especially if it's not just a bunch of dudes, right? I do try to see comedies, but I think about, because I did my top 100 on Letterboxd, and there weren't a lot of comedies on there, although the comedies that are there are pretty highly ranked.
Right.
And this one, Booksmart, when I saw it, I do a thing on my birthday if I can. I like to, if I can isolate myself, I'll just spend all day at the movie theater, starting at 11 o'clock, try to grab as many movies as possible.
Yeah.
And I started my day with Booksmart, and I was like, this is amazing. And yeah, it was a matinee, so there weren't a lot of people there. And I'm like, this is amazing. This is going to be a blockbuster. And it wasn't.
Well, okay. So to sum it up real quick. Directed by Olivia Wilde, the log line on it is academic overachievers Amy and Molly fought keeping their noses to the grindstone gave them a leg up on their high school peers. But on the eve of graduation, the best friends suddenly realize they may have missed out on the special moments of their teenage years. Determined to make up for lost time, the girls decide to cram 4 years of not-to-be-missed fun into one night, a chaotic adventure that no amount of book smarts could prepare them for. It was released on March 10th, 2019. It had a budget of $6 million. Very small, even for 2019. Box office actually at $25 million. So I'm not sure. I hear usually it's double whatever the budget was for marketing, right? So it probably cost about $12 million. So it turned a little bit of a profit. I mean, $12 million. Even if you just go $12 million, I mean, that's not, it's nothing to sneeze at. I think, it starred, Beanie Feldstein and Caitlin Dever. And then it has, Lisa Kudrow's in it. Will Forte, Jason Sudeikis, who's in everything. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, at that point, you know, Olivia Wilde was married to Jason Sudeikis, and I did think he used some of that sphere is there, because you see some great work there. This should be considered a very successful comedy, and I think it is. One of the things, it was marketed as the lady version of Superbad. You know, because it is that wild two friends on a wild night out movie, which is a pretty iconic trope and can be very successful, right?
Yeah,
this is one of those great 24 hours of mayhem movies that a lot of John Hughes films have.
Yeah,
a lot of that, you know, and it but I think that this is the antidote to some of those super toxic high school movies.
Yeah,
I remember Superbad being one of my favorite comedies, so I went back and tried to watch it a few years ago, and it is, I had to turn it off because it made me nauseated. Our two characters are just incels in the making. They're just it's full of like homophobic slurs, misogyny. Are these people even friends? And it also had that really wild binary that a lot of these have, where it's either like the cool kids versus the popular kids.
Yeah.
You're like, there's some way that kids need to be, which is the big flaw of John Hughes films, where a lot of times at the end, the geeky kid becomes popular. Like Breakfast Club's greatest sin is that they took Ally Sheedy as the hot goth, the weird goth girl who's totally somebody I would have fallen in love with, and they make her look like a 30-year-old, like a middle-aged housewife at the end, and somehow she's been fixed. But this movie, I think, is how to do high school comedies right, and I have a lot of feelings about it. So
I absolutely loved this film. Like, I'm not gonna beat around the bush. Like, I laughed so much. It was hard to remember. I was trying to remember, like, when did I laugh at a movie this hard by myself? Because that's a judgment too, right? Like, God, I would have loved to have seen this in a theater full of people. It was and I think I related to both. Like,
yeah,
I missed out on high school a lot, but not necessarily for grades. It was more out of fear. Like, I just didn't want to get in trouble. So I missed out on some things doing that. I worked a lot, and I get the duh realization when she thinks that, like, I'm going to Yale and no one else is here. And then to find out other kids are going to Yale that actually had fun. And which also, I mean, is, I was thinking this, like, you know, that's not binary either. Like, if you had fun, you might not have been able to get to Yale.
Yeah.
This person might just be exceedingly gifted, and that's why they can do it, right?
Well, I mean, what it does though, it immediately, what this movie does is, you know, you have these two friends who are definitely, like, presented as, you know, we're the nerdy kids, right? And there's a path. You can be a partier or a nerdy kid to succeed as an adult, right? And then that breaks those expectations. That bathroom scene is really great. It does one thing. If this movie was 15, 20 years ago, and they would make it about, you know, look at Booksmart, and not Booksmart,
American Pie,
or any of the movie, the Jonah Hill movie.
Superbad?
Superbad. You know, but there's no comment really on Beanie Feldstein's size, right? In fact, the one comment is, she's hot, but her personality, she's a real butter personality, right? There's no fat jokes in this. Okay, you froze. There you go.
Did
me.
I?
Oh,
no, maybe. No. I was just still. I was just so still.
There's no real fat jokes in this. And also, I will say that I do think that Beanie Feldstein is, you know, attractive in this. You know, they dress her well. They do all that. And they break that idea completely, right?
Did you say his sister?
Yes.
Is that Jonah Hill's sister?
Yes.
In real life?
Yes.
And now I'm looking at her and going, oh, now am I going to find Jonah Hill attractive? I don't.
Yeah. Well.
Wait, like half-sisters? How's the name? Is Jonah Hill a fake name? Or is her name fake?
I assume that the more Jewish name is the actual
name. That's true. Probably.
And then they, you know, a lot of times they'll change it, you know, especially attitudes. And I think that has changed, so you have that, and it's established too. What is great, there's no clear villain in this. There's no, like, all of these characters, it focuses on you know, the two characters, the two main characters, but all of these characters, I would follow their stories. I would love if there was a Booksmart cinematic universe, because I want to know how all of them do. Yeah. I could see the sequel being about her and Triple A at Yale together, right? And that, because, you know, Caitlin Dever makes the decision not to to put off going to college, right? Bobby Lord's character is amazing in this. As the rich, she's kind of like a coyote level trickster god that sows chaos, where benign chaos wherever she is, and shows up and is kind of has this mystical thing, because how is she at every single party?
Right, right.
But even the rich kid who's traditionally the villain, the rich kid who can have whatever he wants,
yeah,
he's very sympathetic.
Yeah.
And he is almost healing. And at the end, they pose him as kind of a romantic possibility. Mm. And all of that. Even the popular jock kid is human. And so it does a thing where it's like, hey, this is a very human night of a bunch of stories that happen at once. And I think that's extremely successful, not just as a comedy, but as a movie.
Yeah.
It's kind of a really good ensemble cast.
Now, Molly, the main girl going to Yale, one of the things I thought was interesting was, like, people painted her as a nerd, right? But she had to be somewhat popular, because she's class president.
Yeah.
So, well, she's class president, yeah. And I mean, to do that, you have to have some degree of, you're not unlikable. You're not unlikable now. Yeah. So she wasn't, but, like, I was trying to think of who in my school she would have been, but we only had like 60 people, so it was hard to narrow that in.
Yeah, maybe nobody else wanted the job, but I have a feeling like she was a known quantity, right?
Yeah.
You know? And she probably did a lot of really impressive stuff, right? And was one of those. But, you know, I think we all exist in our kind of weird little worlds. Because I remember being kind of really shy and withdrawn in high school. But I've had a lot of people from the past reach out to me and remember me as one of the popular kids. And because I guess I did have, like, a pretty vibrant friend group, and I was doing interesting things. But
you wouldn't have yourself put you as, like, say, like, I was in the popular kid
group. Yeah. But, you know, it's all kind of just in retrospect. But I think high school is kind of its own private hell for all of us. Yeah. So, you know, we kind of go through that. What was nice is all of these kids, because a lot of times the villain is kind of, you see somebody who's peaked in high school. All of these kids seem full of potential, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's truly, I just love it. And there's also a moment. So I don't know. Should we just do the beats of what it is? How do we talk about
it? I mean, more kind of like in a book club, you don't necessarily go through the whole thing, but I think you talk about, like, themes of it or about backstage stuff or behind the scenes. Well, so I mean, what do you think, number one, what do you think of the lesson of the film is? Do you think it is it is what the plot is? Do you think the film's lesson to not wait till graduation to party? Like, is it?
I don't know if it's even that. I think I do think what it does is it really humanizes these characters on a. I see it. I call this kind of the antidote to the damage of John Hughes high school films, right?
Yeah.
It kind of, what it does is it kind of breaks the expectations that there's one good way to high school or to be a person or develop as a human being, right? Because we have all this. And at the end, it's kind of the end of this journey that all of these kids, for better or worse, took together, right?
Yeah.
And it is, just kind of made me just it was, I felt a lot of things that first time I saw it. And then going back and seeing it with my wife in theaters, because I needed to bring her. We own the soundtrack, by the way, because the soundtrack is great, right? So one of my birthday presents a while ago was that. But I think in general, it's just a beautiful humanizing drama. You know, it has aspects of really giving us these characters. The one, you know, sometimes I feel it leaned into comedy, like it sort of broke its mold a little bit. Usually when the adults are involved, you know, it's just, you know, but I just kind of, and rewatching it, I was like, man, this is kind of just immaculate as far as like rhythm and beats. And it has one of my favorite heartbreaking kisses in a movie.
Which one?
So there is this, it lasts a minute, but there is a minute that totally encompasses the joy and heartbreak of being a teenager and like waking up to kind of the possibilities of romance, you know, that unique kind of high school love that happens.
The bathroom scene?
They finally get to the, well, actually, I identified with that in a little way too, you know, but when they get to finally the party that they've been looking for, going from a series of parties and weird misadventures, they finally end up where they want to go. And things seem to be going the way they want. They are connecting with both of their crushes. They are realizing that, we do belong. And the whole goal of the movie, or stated goal, is they have made it, right? And then you have that great scene where everybody is peeling into their underwear to go into the swimming pool.
Yeah.
And Caitlin Dever's character goes under the water and is kind of floating to that song, right?
Yeah.
And right there, she's full of possibility. You know, she's going to, her crush invited her here. She's where, and once she gets up to the surface of, you know, she's going to emerge to this new world of possibility. And what happens as soon as she goes up and just, she goes and she sees that her crush and her best friend's crush are kissing, right? Like, and they're like, oh, the world is not the way I thought it was, you know, and you kind of have that. And I think that is just one of the most beautiful scenes on how to use a kiss as a heartbreaking thing. Another one of my favorite movies is Drive, which is kind of also a love letter to L.A. Like this is, there is a scene in that movie where Ryan Gosling's character, the driver, the stuntman, he is in with the single mom who he has romanced, you know, and fallen in love. And they are in an elevator and he realizes that the other person in the elevator is there to kill both of them. And so he kisses this woman that he derailed his life to protect and better, you know, broke all his rules for. He kisses her with all of him because he knows that he's about to do something that she will never be able to look him in the eye again, where he stomps that guy to death right in front of her, right? Those two things, those two scenes are beautiful, tragic, gorgeous human moments. And for me, just this movie deserves to be on list just to capture that teenage feeling right there. That minute is, I think, one of the best moments in cinema for me.
I couldn't help watching this with having a 16-year-old daughter. I'm watching this movie, and I know she's had this ideas of what high school should be like and being kind of disappointed that it's maybe a little more boring than she expected. It's, but also it's like, man, this is way tougher to navigate in high school now than for me. I don't know, maybe in maybe partly because it's interesting because you could, your sexuality can be open there. It's so open that people don't know.
Yeah.
Like, you don't even talk about it. Like, it doesn't come up. Yeah. Right. And man, that's even harder. Like, it could be anything. And so you're just trying to give hints, right? Without it being, I love that there was no shame. Like, I mean, it's probably the first teen movie in forever that didn't treat being gay as something that they would have been ashamed of or having to come out. Like, nobody had to come out, right? It was just very accepted that she was, this is who she is. This is just the way.
The movie had queer characters.
Yeah.
That just existed in the scheme of things. You know,
Yeah.
But that wasn't necessarily a big issue. And then let's go to the other great kissing scene, right? Where the kissing scene that goes wrong, that makeout scene where she's having this moment, you know, it's, oh, she's going to have this redemption moment, right? And, but then, you know, there's the missteps of her putting her fingers in the wrong place and then just drinking that fallen soldier, you know, that accidentally drinking the... And then vomiting on her love interest.
Yes.
And again, but then all of that goes to leads her to have one of the more heroic moments.
Yeah.
Where we see this new, we see the character we really wanted, because she'd been passive to all of those events. And then she finally takes an aggressive moment by, and one of the reasons she could get away with it is because she's kind of spending all of her purity, you know?
Yeah. In one night.
And it is. And Caitlin Dever has then shown herself to be an actor that can act with all of her body. You know, mm-hmm. there was that sci-fi film, like No One Is Safe or something that was on Hulu. Yeah. About the alien invasion, where she doesn't say a word and she's pretty amazing in it, right? And she's done, like, well, both of these, so many people in this movie have went on to do super interesting things. And I think that is great. It's just one of those beautiful ensemble movies. Is this the aughts? I guess that was 2010 it came out, right?
2019. 19.
What?
2019.
2019?
Yeah.
Okay, why did I think it's 2019. Yes. Is this the teens big chill? I feel like it's been around forever. So
okay. One thing I wanted to talk about that I thought was super cool in the shooting of it. So most of it was shot at night.
Yeah.
Olivia Wilde was a working mom. But she, in the mornings after filming, she would take the time to bring her children to school. Like,
yeah.
So she would take the kids to school for a while. She tried to do like it couldn't last thing. And I just thought that was so. I thought it was such a great thing to think about, like, man, you can't even direct a film without getting out of your duties as a woman.
Yeah.
Right. You're still no. You're making a movie. I'm guessing Spielberg didn't take his kids to school a lot while he's shooting E.T. or whatever.
Yeah.
Probably gone. I like that. And then what was it? I just thought it was the animated doll sequence.
Yeah.
It took 5 months to shoot.
Oh, yeah. Because of the that is what stood out on my last rewatch, is like how wild that sequence is and how sexual it is, right? And almost kind of a hint of what we're gonna see with Caitlin Dever's character later. And it is fun, it is interesting though, but like it does follow the rhythm. Because a lot of movies will have a drug sequence.
Yeah, right? I guess that's true.
Teen adventures will have it. And even I just recently watched Strays, which I enjoyed more than I thought it would. That follows this, you know, your wild night out, but with talking dogs. And they have a drug sequence.
I don't know why, but this one seemed a little more, besides, Well, okay, I'm saying this in a good way. Like, it seemed, the animated sequences seemed almost, like, this seems like a different movie. Like, what are you doing? But it did not take me out of the film, which I expected it to.
Yeah. The one misstep is when the pizza delivery guy, you know, the big, like, how they get her out of jail is by catching the serial killer.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and I, but
too convenient. About, like, was it too was it too convenient too for convenient. Her? See, I was more bothered by the graduation being the next day and how it was like, what's this graduation? There's like no parents here. It's just the kids all hanging out there.
Okay.
Yeah. In the morning.
Well, there couldn't have been kids there. Also, there couldn't have been parents there to make it work, right?
Because
she would have plowed through them with her car.
Right, right, right. I know. I know.
But, well, now I'm going to think about that forever.
The end of it. They should have plowed through the parent.
It did have, it was very successful. My problem with a lot of comedies is third act problem, where it spends two thirds of the movie getting us into these ridiculous situations and amping up the absurdity. And then at the minute it pulls back and is like, well, now we're going to resolve everything and put us back to normal.
Yeah.
I think that this movie is fairly successful in pushing its way through that, right? Because we have a nice final moment. We do get that kind of analog, your epilogue right there, where they're like, and this is, you know, and these are how people are feeling, and, you know, this is where these characters are at that point. And that is sweet, but it really doesn't. And it doesn't try to fix any of these folks. They just grow and mature. And I like that. There's enhancing who they are personalized instead of correcting who they are. And I really like that.
You make me think with that statement, though, like about the third act problem. I wonder if that is one of the big issues that differentiates the great comedies from the mediocre, because I was talking recently about I did a review on this movie on Hulu that I absolutely loved the whole movie until the last 15 minutes. And I forget the name of it now, but it's about the assassin game where they're like trying to kill them. Anna Kendrick's in it and someone else in his first movie, but they're trying to kill them as part of a dark web game. And I don't remember the name, but then I was so infuriated by how it ended because it was so stupid.
Yeah.
That I think, like, cause it like had a potential of being like, if you just stick this landing, you're going to be a great comedy, and it didn't. And so now I can't even remember the name of it because I'm so mad. A good
example of that for me from last year is Joyride, which I thought was very fun. Which was originally supposed to be called Mary Fuck, Eat Pray Fuck. That had the all Asian female comedy. I thought that was really good. It got so wild, and then it dialed back, and you know, it had the resolve of the conflict, and then later on, and then you know, it kind of had this soft ending when it could have really pushed through and gotten us somewhere great.
Yeah.
I really love the whole thing, but you know, and that's also just how formulaic comedies are. You know, just like, oh, and now we now have to learn a lesson. And then, you know, the whole thing where, don't worry, there's a resolution here. A movie that successfully did this, and I also enjoy very much as a high school movie, who I think is almost the heir apparent in my heart to Booksmart, was Bottoms.
Oh, Bottoms. Oh, I love Bottoms.
Bottoms was amazing.
Yeah.
And Bottoms is also, I think, a great high school movie in that, but kind of in the reverse, everyone in that movie is awful.
Yeah.
Every character is awful, and so you have so many people to root for. But what does it do? It gets weirder and weirder, and then it ends in such a bizarre, bloody, glorious finale. Yeah. It's just, and it did a lot what you want to do. It amped up the intensity, and it did not dial back. So for me, it's the most successful comedy I saw last year.
Yeah. Easily. Yeah.
I mean, this year, and I know it came out last year, but this year for me right now, American Fiction is on top of that. But I enjoyed that movie so much, I feel bad calling it a comedy.
Yeah.
As a professional comedian, I almost use comedy as a dirty word.
It is. Well, I do think, American Fiction, I actually didn't think of it as a comedy until they started calling it a comedy. I'm like, yeah, I mean, I guess I wouldn't call it a drama.
I think
it's a little more real. It feels that's a little more lifelike, where like Booksmart, it has the complete exaggerations to go, well, this is a clear comedy. I would never confuse it with anything.
Yeah.
It's not a dramedy.
I will say, and maybe something else will come and fill that. But as far as the movie that I laughed at the most this year, laughed with it the most, because I did laugh at The Beekeeper quite a lot.
I enjoyed The Blackening quite a bit, but I think I could get that not getting all audiences as much as it got me. I laughed quite a bit during that. But Booksmart, anyway, Booksmart, we're on the... It's interesting when you talked about that there was no villain, because I didn't actually think about that. And so the villain was time. Was the villain themselves? Are they their own? Was she her own worst enemy? Were they her own villains? Or
would say Molly is probably maybe the harshest character in all of that.
Yeah. Like, because the guy, the people who wronged them didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
They did nothing wrong. They didn't. I mean, you could argue that maybe she started getting led on a little bit, but also it was from her point of view. So he may have been like, I wasn't flirting. I was just being nice. This is the first time we've ever had a good conversation.
He probably was flirting, right?
But yeah,
that kind of initial thing, right, that you just kind of do, as a hormonal infuse, and you do have to look like, if they would have had that conversation at the beginning of the year, where would they have been,
right?
You know, there's a few things. The fact that a teacher does have sex with one of her students.
I will say, I was like,
he was 20 years old,
she goes, "You're 20, right?" Like, 20. Sure. Okay.
Well, because he's been held back 2 years.
Wait,
but it does.
Was that a thing in the movie?
Yeah, he was 20.
Was he really 20?
Yeah.
I thought she was just getting him to say that to justify what she was about to do.
No.
So he was. Okay. So it's only creepy, not illegal.
Because Molly does say to him in the bathroom, in the gender neutral bathroom, you're not getting into college. You know, you had to do your sophomore year 3 times or something like that.
He said,
I'm not, but I did get headhunted by Google.
Right. Okay. That's funny. Okay. I'm glad that I could remove
the sex crime.
You did. You did. Because I did actually think about that, going like, this absolutely would not have flown if it was reverse gendered. That would not cool at all. Like, how come we're excusing this right now? Like, she's likable.
If you want to bring up one of my other favorite devastating kisses, it's in Spike Lee's 25th Hour.
I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it.
Okay. Well, there's this scene one of his buddies is a teacher, right? And he has this flirty relationship with one of his students, Anna Paquin, who actually tags along, like shows up, is at the same kind of crazy party. And he ends up kissing the student. And it's something that she, you know, they've been doing.
Yeah.
And they kiss and immediately realize that what both of them did was kind of the most awful thing they could do. And it was just immediately great. To go back. Yeah. I mean, the adults seemed almost superfluous in this, right?
Yeah.
You know? Which maybe was intentional because it shows us like that they were in this world. Well, but also it's kind of an apocalypse movie because it's the end of the world for them.
Yeah.
It is the last. There is no going back. So
there isn't.
Their lives completely changed.
There is a high. There is a funny thing about school. And I don't know. Just. Well, I talked to my daughter about this, about like, you know, like when she doesn't want to do something with her family or whatever. And I'm like, you know, look at how much your friendships have changed in the last couple of years. You're not going to see these people again. Like, don't create bad situations for people that you're going to spend your life with.
Yeah.
Some people stay friends in high school. It takes a lot, you know, once you're in your 30s, 40s, that's a lot harder. Most people see it as growth that you're not friends with your high school people anymore. But it is an end. It is. High school is such the end. Nothing. You will never gather in a group just because they're your neighbors and play with them again the way you will in high school.
Unless you just won't. You're in an apartment full of childless couples with tiny dogs.
Okay, I could see that.
I definitely have like a clique of other dog moms.
Right. Yeah.
But to go back to that, I mean, high school is, but that stuff, your high school experiences kind of build your bones, right? They live in your bones forever and they're foundational. And so a few weeks ago, I found out that a woman that I dated just out of high school died of cancer. At 45 years old.
Yeah.
And she was from my high school group. And that caused a few of us, because not, you know, this is before Facebook and social media and all that. You know, so I'm not connected to a lot of people. A few of us have kind of reconnected, including one of them lives in Shoreline. but I haven't seen her for 20 years or so, because it's kind of hard too. It's like you fought a war together. Do we really want to talk about how damaging it was growing up in Utah as weird?
Yeah,
right?
No,
but, or but real connecting and realizing, oh, these were people that seeing them, like having them in my life, that I would talk to for hours and be part of it. And I've started kind of a semi-regular phone call with one of them because we were really close friends. And it turns out that, like, so we both worked for the Moth, you know?
Oh, which really?
Is kinda interesting.
That's funny.
On different coasts of the country. But kind of sort of going through that and realizing, like, oh, but I think it's also beautiful that you can have these intense relationships. And part of it, there's an intensity to this stuff that you should not, that it's good to walk away from that and develop more healthy relationship. And so when I found out about my friend Julia, it turns out I was her first boyfriend. I did not necessarily realize that. It did start to make me think, you know, I'm glad I'm a better boyfriend now. I think I was just not as present.
Nobody was.
Just thinking of, what?
Nobody was.
Yeah, but just thinking about, you know, all of that and kind of just the stories from there. And there is, I think, too, as we get older, we lose the ability to kind of have these epic nights that are soft because we're, you know, that we can still reset our and grow our lives. If you and I were to have a night out on the town, similar to what our two heroines did, it would end our, you know, it would disrupt a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
The general, you know, it'd be of the hangover level thing, but there's kind of an innocent joy of this. So I think, but you know, I feel this movie, a similar experience I had was when I finally saw Romy and Michelle's high school reunion, where I had avoided that movie because how it'd been marketing as a girls' night out movie. But I realized it's an extremely subversive, fun comedy. And I thought, man, why did I wait? And when I worked at a video store, it was always getting rented out by groups of women, you know?
Yeah.
And in fact, you know, or just, you know, there were these two stoner chicks that loved to rent it, right? Yeah. And I was like, are they watching it ironically? And I was just a 20 something, you know, idiot, you know, but if I would have like been like, oh, I should check it out. Who knows? My view of comedies may have changed. Maybe I would have been smart enough to.
I had not
comedy and not do it.
So, I had not thought about the potential inside of that, of working a video rental and seeing the demographics that are renting certain movies.
Yeah.
That's, I hadn't really thought of that. That's probably gave you some interesting insights on movies. All right. The last thing I want to point out about this film is some of the accolades, because we are not the only ones who liked it. Best first film. It won Austin Film Critics Society. It won a GLAAD Media Awards, Wide Release, Outstanding Film. It won Hollywood Film Awards, Hollywood Breakthrough Director, Independent Spirit Awards, First Time Director, Los Angeles Online Film Critics Society, Best Picture, Best Supporting Actress, Best Female Director, Best Original Screenplay, Best Indie Film, Online Film Critics Award, Best Debut Feature, Olivia Wilde. It garnered a lot of, and those are just wins. It also got a lot of nominations from all over. It did really well. And so I'm like so shocked that I didn't hear about it. I didn't like, well, I heard about it. I'd heard about it and I wanted to see it, but 2019, I'm still like, okay, 2019, that means it was in 2018, my son was born. So that means I was still in that first year about when it came out. I can't see movies. I'm barely making it through the day, let alone.
Yeah. The thing is, though, you look at a movie like this, that anything that is helmed by marginalized voices, it's held up to a stricter lens than others, right?
Yeah.
And unless it blows it out of the water, which you could argue that this movie did, it's considered a failure. And a lot of times in retrospect, Annihilation is one of those, you know, which I think is one of the best sci-fi movies again in the last, you know, movies like that. But you do look at the movies we love are not generally the movies that the box office loved.
Right.
They will go back and they'll come back. But, you know, The Thing was considered a bomb. Right. And that is arguably the most successful horror movie in the last 50 years. This movie, you know, I don't get mad when people say, oh, what's Booksmart? I haven't seen it. I get happy for them, you know, that they get to experience it. But I also really am sad that we didn't get 2-3 years later a Booksmarter, you know, or some.
I'm a little glad they left it. I mean, I worry sometimes. I worry most of the time if I see a sequel.
But I love these characters. Love all of them. Like, I would watch that same night in a different journey, right? A different, what would the rich kid's journey be like, right? What was his day?
Yeah. Does he get another kiss?
Well, yeah, you know, do they? Who knows? But yeah, this, I think, let me see. I'm trying to think of the other comedies I like. Well, Defending Your Life.
Yeah.
One of my favorites.
I think this has a lasting power. I think it'll have a,
yeah.
I think it'll age much better than Superbad did.
I think, well, it definitely does.
Yeah.
I think that, it is, I think, one of the best high school comedies, if not high school movies.
Yeah.
At least for me. And I mean, it does a really great job. Now, as far as like Olivia Wilde, you know, there's all that. I haven't seen Don't Worry, Darling. It has not been celebrated as a masterpiece.
No, but
her second movie. But I would love to see her return to comedy. Now, she does not have the Jason Sudeikis bench that she had before.
Yeah.
You know, after being served the divorce papers by him at a Comic-Con panel, which he said was a misstep. But I can imagine that they are talking.
Minor misstep there. Emmett Montgomery, it was wonderful having you on the show for Booksmart. Thank you for recommending the movie to me. And hopefully from here, opening it up to a broad selection of folks. Okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it's fun when you talk about, you know, when you talk about something you're passionate enough and get people to watch it for the time. And I will always be an evangelist for this movie. I think this is super great. And then, you know, who knows, maybe, this was fun. Maybe we can talk Mandy.
We will do Mandy. We'll do Mandy. Yeah. So thank you for coming on. Thank you, audience, for listening. And thank you for watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein.
You're watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein in the theaters, you find this. So go on and press play and rewind this. This speech that is timeless. Love it like it or we lose it, can't find it. And we ain't keen on being reminded about the film if it isn't tough. We spend a lot of time at the cinema. It's just me and my friends, we watch plenty stuff. For movies, yeah, I've been above. Whether big or they small, no, for me don't make a difference, love. You're watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein in the theaters, you find this. So go on and press play and rewind this. This speech, it is timeless. Love it like it or we lose it, can't find it. And we ain't keen on being reminded about the film if it didn't hit. No, gotta lose it. Watch movies with my friends, bringing joy, that's the blueprint. So come on and let's do this. Leave pain behind us and relax your mind. Come watch a movie with Silas.